Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
UPS is hiring Daysort warehouse workers in our Louisville, Kentucky hub. Our warehouses are team settings where everyone truly has each other's backs, and we work together to deliver what matters to customers and communities. We're paying $20 an hour and offer great benefits, including up to $25,000 in tuition assistance. Eligibility begins the day you're hired. Shift your future, shift your team, shift your life. Visit upsjobs.com to apply. That's upsjobs.com. Make the shift, make a difference.
Injured in a car accident? Visit SueDistractedDriver.com.
Time now for Dan Issel and Louis Ribeau, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Louis.
Good Friday morning, everybody. Thanks for listening. This is Issel and Louis on ESPN 680-105.7. Louis has the day off, so filling in for him today from the very successful podcast, Horse Racing Happy Hour, Mr. Mike Gandolfo. Mike, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Dan. I had a pretty interesting experience last night.
So really?
Did you
do the podcast?
I did not do the podcast. So I typically take December and most of January off just to kind of refresh. And I used to take July off too, but just Louis likes to like plow through it. That's, you know, I think you're going to have to have like a couple little breaks in there, but
I think you just described Issel and Louis. We just kind of plow through it.
Is that what it is? Yeah. No. So actually I went to IU Southeast last night and they had actual Aaron Brockovich, not the movie, but the actual person, given a free speech there last night. So I went to listen to Aaron Brockovich speak.
Now, refresh my memory. I saw the movie.
Yes.
And who played Aaron?
Julia Roberts.
Julia Roberts.
Yeah. Won the Best Actress Award.
Yeah. Is the real Aaron Brockovich as good looking as Julia Roberts?
She is an attractive woman for, you know, now she's in her 60s or whatever else. So I would definitely say she's actually in the movie. So she's the waitress in one of the opening scenes when Julia Roberts is there with the kids and they're trying to figure out what they're gonna do for money, and Aaron Brockovich is actually in the movie. But she was a beauty queen. So there you go. So yeah.
All right. Well, how was the speech?
It was fantastic. You know, I think whenever you hear people who you know, she didn't have a great education, she didn't come from a lot of money, and she found her passion, and she figured out, really, she led with her passion first. She led with serving others, and then the money kind of came because of that. I think it was a really inspiring kind of story too. So, and then she's now very passionate just about environmental issues, and especially with water. And she said that company, so the Pacific, their LG&E is PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric. They have successfully sued that company for more than what that company is valued at. So they've, over all the cases, they've gone after that company for over $90 billion.
Oh, my goodness. They must have a good insurance company.
I guess so.
They must have Louis for an agent.
That very well could be it. $90 billion, Dan. So, you know, anyway, I went and watched the movie for the first time last week, because I knew we were going to go see her talk, and the movie's just fantastic. And
yes, it is.
So
yeah, it's a great movie. It's been a while since I've seen it.
But yeah. It was kind of a neat thing. You know, I think if you pay attention to what kind of goes on around here, you can kind of, there's cool things like that in this area that pop up all the time. So
yeah. Well, I didn't have as interesting an evening as that. However, I have found my new favorite television show.
Okay, what's that?
Yeah, well, those that listen regularly know that Mrs. Issel and I set a period apart every night from 6 to 7 to watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune together. I usually do better than Sherry does in Jeopardy, and she kicks my tail in Wheel of Fortune.
Okay.
But there's a new, what what's his name, Sheridan maybe? There's a guy who has to be the new king of television series. He started with Yellowstone.
Okay.
And then there's a couple of spinoffs off of Yellowstone. One that has Faith Hill and Tim McGraw.
Is it okay? And there's this other one with Trace Atkins. Maybe it's like called Monarch or something like that.
Oh no, that's not his.
That's
but
not
yeah,
him. Okay.
Monarch. Yeah, that's another one we watch.
Okay.
Monarch. But now there's another spinoff off of Yellowstone coming out with Harrison Ford, and I think it starts the middle of December. But he has so that's all kind of Western Wyoming cowboy stuff. All those shows. But he has a new show with Sylvester Stallone called Tulsa King.
Okay,
have you heard of it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we watched the first episode a few nights ago. There's only three out, and it's a story about a guy who is in the mob in New York, and he doesn't rat out his friend, and as a result spends 25 years, this is the Stallone character, in prison. And he gets out, and he thinks he's going to be welcomed back into the family in New York, and they send him to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he is basically a mobster in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's very, very entertaining. So that's what I did last night.
Well, yeah, that's some good stuff. Don, do you watch Yellowstone?
Oh yeah.
Okay, I haven't really gotten into that show yet, but I've gotten stopped in the airport a couple times when people have asked if I'm Rip from Yellowstone. That's no joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's quite a compliment.
I guess
Rip is a heartthrob.
So it happened last time. It happened. I was at an Omni Resort in Florida, and I was sitting around the fire pit, and someone came up and said, "Hey, are you Rip from Yellowstone?" I was like, "No, no." So hate to disappoint you, but no, I'm not.
Yeah, no, we're big Yellowstone fans
here.
There you go. So, hey, I heard the crew before us talking about the transfer portal. You know, the most overused phrase in sports talk these days, both on radio and television, Mike, is with the transfer portal and the
NIL.
It's the wild, wild west. Everybody refers to it as, but I mean, this thing is the wild, wild west. And I just want to give one example. Cade McNamara, who was the starting quarterback at Michigan. And he got beat out this year. And so the transfer portal doesn't officially open until next week, right?
Correct.
This guy has already said he's entering the transfer portal and has said where he's going. Now, you can't tell me there's not some tampering going on with these college football and, I'm assuming, basketball players. I mean, the transfer portal isn't even open yet, and he's decided he's going to Iowa. This thing is completely out of control. No rules or regulations whatsoever.
What was it a couple – I don't know. It was probably more than a couple years ago, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, when that Cleveland State basketball coach got all upset because he's like, I got Division I coaches walking on my campus, you know, trying to recruit my guys off my team.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I don't know, you know, if Cade McNamara just wanted to go to Iowa all the time and is like, that's where I'm going. Because, you know, as a Kentucky fan, we kind of need a quarterback next year. I'm watching these quarterbacks who are coming in the portal, and, you know, it's you watch the portal, I think, from two different perspectives. Who's leaving your team, right, and then who's available for you all to go get, and especially for Kentucky fans, the quarterback position. I've been very pleased, by the way, Dan, about the guys that, you know, I look at the collective, I guess, of the guys that are leaving, and it's obviously the guys who just look ahead and they're like, I'm not going to have the opportunity that I need. I mean, we've lost a ton of receivers. You see that Berrian Brown and Dane Key are going to be the mainstays of the receiving core for a long time. And so I think they've lost three receivers, you know.
Yep.
Magwood being the big one, I guess, that really hurts. But at the end of the day, I can understand why that guy wants to go play somewhere. And then, of course, Kavassier Smoke, which he probably needs to change the scenery, right? I mean,
Exactly. He's been there for, what, two or three years now and has never had that. Even when he was the featured back, Mike, in the first four games,
right.
he still wasn't able to get it done. So, yeah, he needs to go somewhere.
And, of course, we lost our running back coach, or you know, we decided to make a change there. So that makes a lot of sense. You got a new coach coming in. You know, go ahead and find another situation that's probably going to fit your needs. And I think it just what it says about the Kentucky program is really interesting, because you're not having guys leave because it's toxic, or you're not having guys leave because they want to go win somewhere else. Like, you're having guys because they see that they've got better players in front of them, right?
So yeah, they don't find their name on the depth chart any place. So it's time to move on. But my point about McNamara, and you said maybe he just wanted to go to Iowa. You know, with the landscape the way it is, nobody just wants, in my mind, nobody just wants to go someplace. They're going to go where they have, not number one, an opportunity to play, and number 1B, how much NIL money are they going to get? And so what I'm saying is this thing smells a little bit like there were negotiations going on. I mean, the transfer portal isn't even open yet.
Right, yeah.
So I
don't know how you feel about the NIL thing, but I think one of the biggest problems with the NIL is that the NCAA tried to get involved with it in the first place. I just kind of wish they would have said, hey, you can do this and go find your own opportunities, and the colleges can have nothing to do with it whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, Louie and I have talked about this a lot. The NCAA's plan was, we're going to win the lawsuit.
Right.
That was their plan.
Which they were never going to win the lawsuit.
No, they never were. They never win any lawsuit. And so how they did not have a fallback position when this went to the Supreme Court, how they did not have a fallback position is beyond me. And now I think everybody's hope, of course, different states have passed different laws, but I think everybody's hope was that the government would get involved and Congress would somehow come up. Well, if you're waiting for the government to help, good luck with that. But I agree with NIL. I mean, you know, the fact that these schools are making literally, Mike, hundreds of millions of dollars,
right,
and a parent can't go see her son or daughter play in a college sporting event because they can't afford an airline ticket, that's just not right. So I think NIL, but man, you got to have some rules. You've got to have some structure that these schools can follow. You cannot tell me that there hasn't, that Cade McNamara woke up one morning and said, I want to go to Iowa City and play football. you can't tell me that happened. I mean, somebody from Iowa has been in touch with this kid, telling him what's available, how much money he can expect to make. And I'm assuming, and I think I'm correct, it's going on all over the country.
You would think
you
so. Vassal program, but anywhere else. Everywhere else.
Oh, man. That's kicking a dog when he's down. You can't tell me that some of these schools haven't contacted Barry and Brown. I guarantee you that.
Oh, I'm sure they have. I mean, Tennessee's players were doing it right after the game, right? I mean, they wanted him to come back over. So, yeah, I mean, but I kind of go the other way, Dan. I kind of wish they would let the Wild Wild West take place. But, again, just the rule being that the schools could not be involved. If the kid wanted to go find their opportunity, they wanted, like, let the kid hire an agent. Let the kid go get his own commercial deals. Let the kid go do whatever he wants to go do.
100%.
And the only rule is that the school can't dictate it. The school can't set it up, whatever else. And just take the university piece out of it, because then I think capitalism would take place. I mean, at the end of the day, like, there's going to have to be some value for that kid. And the other thing, like, I know that – I think you know that my daughter – was supposed to go play basketball at the NAIA level this year. She unfortunately got another injury, so she had to. It's not going. It just didn't work out. But
right.
When we actually had the conversation with them, and at the NAIA level, if you can do NIL, you can get name, image, and likeness money. But at that point, you can get no athletic scholarship money. So, I mean, again, that could make sense here. I mean, if we're talking about Oscar Tshiebwe, you know, making $1 million, does he need to get an athletic scholarship, you know? And so you, there's just little things like that that I think could kind of come into play that could make the, you know, and again, I'm not one who says that you, I think you go out and you get what you're worth, right? So, like, if, you know, I understand that the quarterback is probably going to be worth more than the offensive line person. But I also know that, like, you know, the big winners in NIL early on were, the, like, the gymnasts from LSU who had this unbelievable Instagram following. Like, it had nothing really to do with their athletic ability whatsoever. Like, there was ways to capitalize on that. And, again, the schools getting involved and the NCAA kind of getting involved and just, instead of just saying, yeah, you can go do this and then just letting it alone, it, I think, makes it a bigger mess than anything else.
Yeah, and it, I think one of the original rules, and I don't even know that you can call it a rule because there are no rules. So was that you could not use NIL as a recruiting tool.
Well, that's happening. We know
well,
what's
who
happening.
In the world thought that that was not going
to
happen?
Right.
I mean, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So, yeah, you're right. It's kind of resetting the show. At 11 o'clock, we will have our picks without Pat. We'll talk about the five Power Five conference games that are taking place. I'm really excited about this, Mike. Starts tonight with Utah, and then Utah and Southern Cal, and then the other four are tomorrow. And, of course, Picks Without Pat is brought to you by Chef's Cut Pizza on the corner of LaGrange Road and UPS Drive. And at 11:30, we'll do our handicapping segment. Tomorrow is Cigar Mile Day at the Belmont at Aqueduct Meet. They also have three other graded steak races. Unfortunately, watching the national news last night, it looks like New York City's going to get dumped on.
Oh, really? I didn't even check the weather, I guess.
Yeah, and so, unfortunately, it looks like looks like there's going to be a very sloppy track at Aqueduct tomorrow.
And, you know, on that Cigar Mile Day, there's two really good two-year-old races. And and I think that's the really, in some ways, to me, the star of the show. And I'm a little disappointed that it's going to get rained on because this year, Louie and I both get an Eclipse Award vote, which I'm really excited about. But I'm having trouble, especially the two-year-old filly, champion filly. That field is all over the place. The two favorites who were supposed to come in 1-2 in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly finished last and second to last. And so just trying to figure out even who would get my vote in that thing is it's wide open. So I was really looking forward to watching race six, the Demoiselle at Aqueduct. And, you know, now if it's going to get dumped on, I don't know what that does for it. So the last two winners of that race, by the way, Dan, do you know who they were?
Yes, I do. Two Curlin fillies by the name of Nest and Malathat.
That's a pretty good. That's a pretty good group right there. So
yes, and Malathat's little sister will be a big favorite in that race tomorrow.
Yes, yeah. And so I was actually looking forward to seeing that, to seeing Julia Shining and just really see like if that's. I mean, if she came out and she was dominant. There's no reason why the winner of this is more important to the winner of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile in my eyes, and
well,
can easily be that two-year-old filly.
Yeah, and the reason that these two races are so important is they're at a mile and an eighth. That's
two
pretty
turns.
Good distance. Yeah,
yep.
That's pretty good distance for two-year-olds. And so it's usually, as we just said with Nest and Malathat, and I think. Mo Donegal not win the Remsen?
Mo Donegal won the Remsen, and Zandon came in second.
And so this has been a great barometer for you know, classic Triple Crown colts and Oaks and fillies for next year. So yeah, it'll be fun. We'll talk about that. I want to get back to the transfer portal.
Sure.
For one other thing, and there was an article. Who wrote this? John Hale. John Hale with the Herald Leader. And he mentioned four positions that Kentucky would be looking at in the transfer portal. And we've already covered three of them, the offensive line, the quarterback and the running back, and his fourth position was an edge rusher for the defense. But I want to read something to you here, Mike, and okay. See is Stoops sticking his head in the sand? He was asked by a caller on his call-in show about you know, basically replacing the offensive line in the transfer portal, and here was Stoops' answer. Bottom line, simple answer: yes, we are looking for a little bit of help in the portal for offensive line. Respectfully disagree with some of the opinions of other guys. There have been some times when we underperformed. I felt like we were a lot better as the year went on. I felt like some of that is on us, which is, that's typical coach speak.
Sure.
And as I mentioned all year, we got caught short at left tackle. We had a left tackle leave, decided to play in the NFL, and didn't make it. I guess he's referring to Rosenthal. Is that who he's talking about?
I would think Dari would be the guy he's talking about. Yeah, because I don't.
So he said if he was here, we wouldn't have to kick Horsey out to the left tackle. Kenneth could play inside. All of a sudden, you're pretty stout. I don't know that I agree with that. Watching this team play, and I watched every play of every game. I don't think moving Horsey from tackle to guard and having Rosenthal back is the simple way that all of a sudden they're pretty stout. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think the only thing that I would say is that when you have that left tackle position shored up, and with a guy who should be playing left tackle, you know, first off, because Horsey probably should not be playing left tackle. He's definitely more of a guard center. But the nice thing about Horsey was that he was really a Swiss Army knife. And so he could almost play every position on that offensive line, and you kind of lose that versatility when you had to put him out at tackle and try to shore that up. So I think that would be my only thing there, is that Horsey was, I mean, literally, like, he really could play pretty much anywhere. And I think my bigger concern is, like, why are we not, you know, we were so high on getting Goodwin.
Exactly.
Why is
what happened to him?
Not, yeah, why is he not the guy who we're like, oh, we have our left tackle of the future? You know, as far as I know, like, he didn't burn his red shirt, you know, because I don't think he played enough. So why is that not like, hey, we've got our left tackle for the next 2 or 3 years with him? And really, the left guard starter was a freshman. Your center starter was a junior. Manning, who did a pretty good job, is a senior, and he's going to be gone, but he had a freshman behind him who and then you had a junior at right tackle. Like, another year of maturity kind of goes a long way, and I think if you get one piece in that offensive line potentially. But the Goodwin stuff is starting to concern me a little bit, because I think we should, like, is he not grasping the college game? What's going on here with Keyonte Goodwin? That to me is the bigger question.
I think that's a great question, and it's not like there was somebody great playing in front of him that kept him on the bench. I mean, if this kid could play a little bit, I think he would have been out there on the field instead of being redshirted.
But you would think so, because you're not looking at him to stick around for 5 years. I mean, you wouldn't.
No,
not the way
if
he
he's
came
that
in.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, he was a 5-star recruit. I'm just a little, no, I'm a lot nervous about how much we're depending. I mean, right now, in my estimation, we have, you know, regardless of what Soup says here, I think we're more than one position away from having a stout offensive line. We have no quarterback. We have basically no running back. Are we going to be dependent on what we can get out of the transfer portal for this team to be competitive in the SEC East next year?
Well, we're definitely going to be dependent on the I mean, they going into this, I think they knew that they were going to be dependent on the transfer portal for that quarterback position. I mean, I think that was no question about it. And so that is the most key piece that they've got to go out there and figure out. You know, McClain at running back, I don't know really what's behind him, if I'm being honest. But I almost like the idea, too, of, like, if we're thinner at running back and then we bring in the right offensive coordinator who can get Berrien Brown the ball in different ways. Like, I would love to see Berrien Brown be used almost like a Deebo Samuel type player, the way way we've used Cobb and the way we used am I blanking on his name? He had to play quarterback for a while. Number one, you know who I'm talking about, and I'm totally blanking on his name.
Yeah, but I'm terrible with
You're on
your own here.
Yeah, but if we can use Berrien Brown in that kind of way, you know, and get him the ball and just create a spot. I mean, the team has speed. We know that. But the running back situation, they'll figure out a couple pieces to go there. I think those running backs are, and I especially look at this, the NFL, like, running backs are – a prime position, but at the end of the day, like, there's not much separation between a good one and the rest of the pool. But if you have the right offensive line, you can make an average running back look really, really good.
No question. No question. And that's why I said this year, C-Rod, I mean, he got all of his yards in spite of the offensive line, not because of the offensive line. But you're absolutely right. You put that offensive line that we had last year out there, and some of these running backs that didn't get much done this year would be serviceable. They're not going to rush for, you know, 1,300 yards, but they're going to do a good enough job to play on a winning team.
But you're also missing the biggest recruiting news from yesterday.
What's that?
We got a long snapper.
All right. I did not see that.
Yeah, so a high school senior from Colorado committed for long snapper, and I can tell you right now that every Kentucky fan knows the value of having a good long snapper this season. Because you can't tell me that Mark Ruffalo all of a sudden couldn't kick field goals. And of course, the punting problem, too, like, it was on the long snapper. That was the issue we had. So
No question. Hey, Mike, are you hungry this morning?
Of course I am.
You better get your track shoes on, because this disappears very quickly. We want to thank George and the Bear Nose team for bringing lunch by the ESPN studios today. Bear Nose has you covered for all of the big events. I think Louisville plays at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon, do they not?
They do.
So stop in Bear Nose by the bridge, right across the street from the Yum Center. Stop in early for lunch, or have an early dinner after the game, or better yet, grab a pizza and take it home for dinner after the game on Sunday. Carry out, delivery, or dine in, 14 area metro locations, it's that good. Bear Nose Pizza. Now, one other question I had for you, and then after the break, we'll move on to something else about Kentucky football. Will Levis has announced that he's leaving.
That he's going to the NFL, yes.
But he has not announced.
That's the worst kept secret there, right? So, yes, I'm going to be a top 15 pick. I'm going to leave, yes. Yeah.
But he has not said if he's going to play in a bowl game yet. Is this just holding out until Kentucky can get the best bowl game they possibly can?
Or even more so than that, like, maybe they don't want to tip their hat from a scouting perspective or whatever else. I don't know. And maybe, you know, yesterday we both said that we think he's already made up his mind, and I still lean that way. But maybe the kid is a competitor, so maybe he is legit struggling with the decision, you know. He seems like he would be a good teammate. Like, he would be the kind of guy who would want to be out there with his teammates and do it one more time. And I think he's just really struggling. Like, hey, I'm banged up, but I want to be there. That could be the case. But there's no reason to make a decision before Sunday when you're going to find out whether it's the Liberty Bowl or the Las Vegas Bowl. And again, I'm really hoping for the Liberty Bowl in that case, just to have the extra 2 weeks. But that would be, to me, the biggest thing he's going for is just – you know, really getting an assessment of.
Yeah, I think another drawback with the Las Vegas Bowl is that would take a weekend out of the recruiting period, right?
Right.
I think that would mean that rather than being in Lexington and being able to host recruits and things like that, maybe it'd be better to host them in Las Vegas than in Lexington. But I think that's another drawback to going to the Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, you know, and then, of course, I think Stoops used to really like having recruits in. You could take them to the Rupp Arena and see a basketball game, whatever else. But I'll tell you what, man, COVID has changed college basketball so much because, and we can talk about this on the other side of the break because I know we're getting close to the break, but even if you're halfway decent, fans just do not fill stadiums anymore. You know, the Indiana-North Carolina game being the exception, it's just different now, Dan, isn't it?
It really is, and I think, unfortunately, I think a lot of people, especially people in my age bracket, who don't want to fight the traffic and the parking and all of that
stuff. The 9 o'clock start times?
Exactly. I think that, we learned that, not that we can do without it, but we learned that sitting at home in front of the television on a nice couch is just as good as being there. And I think you're absolutely right. I think I think it'll be a while before these stadiums or arenas are full again.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. All right, you want to go ahead and head to a break?
Yeah. Reminder that this hour of Issel and Louie is brought to you by Kentucky Tourism. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than the Bluegrass State. Hike forest trails, paddle through clear waters, enjoy a horseback ride, or simply soak up the sights and sounds of nature. Looking for more thrills? Hop on a mountain bike, race through rapids, venture deep underground, or zip through the treetops. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
This segment with Dan Issel and Louie Rabeau is presented by KentuckyTourism.com.
All right, a little Shania Twain bringing us back on the Issel and Louie show.
Very, very good. Now, see, there's no way that Louie would have picked that up.
Are you serious?
No.
He didn't even know 9 to 5.
He doesn't know anything about country music.
Jeez. Listen, he's from north of the Mason-Dixon line.
There you go. Way north.
Way north.
Way north.
Obviously, I'm not Louie. I'm the much better version of the horse racing happy hour. Better looking version, I should say.
He's Rip.
I'm Rip from Yellowstone. This is Mike Gandolfo and Dan Issel here, and we are in the second half hour of our show. And Dan, we're talking a little bit about college basketball and the crowds. And, of course, this season has been incredible. We saw another top five team go down last night.
Yeah, it's amazing. As I said yesterday, there's 25 teams out there that could win this thing. And, you know, you mentioned how COVID has affected all sports.
Sure.
But, you know, the UK right now is in London to play Michigan. And that game should have been played 2 years ago,
it was postponed because of COVID. That's right.
Yeah, and now they're evidently the Cal was approached by the Naismith Hall of Fame about doing this game, and it kind of turned into okay, we'll do this game in London, then we'll have. And Cal has mentioned this, although it hasn't officially been announced, that Michigan will come to Rupp next year, and then Kentucky will go to Michigan the following year.
Will he actually go to Ann Arbor?
Yeah, I think so. That's not like the kennel.
I understand that, but I do think he shies away from putting the team in hostile environments, which I'm not a fan of. I don't necessarily look at losses as a bad thing in the season if you can learn from the loss and put yourself in tough environments and get something out of it. I mean, it's all part of the growing process, right? I mean,
well, but he's going to have to, talking about Cal, if he wants to, and I totally agree with you. I mean, beating the Ospreys by 40 points in my mind does not help whatsoever. That does nothing to improve your club because it's just too easy. Just too easy. And so, but he has wanted to build up the non-conference schedule in Rupp. He's taken some criticism for, playing these better teams on a neutral site, and not playing in Rupp Arena. So Cal's trying to build up that non-conference schedule in Lexington. But to do that, Mike, he's going to have to agree to go to these other places.
Yep.
I mean, schools like Michigan, Indiana, they're not going to agree to come to Lexington to play one game and then go to Indianapolis to play their home game. It just won't work that way.
What was the most hostile environment you played in at UK?
Tennessee.
No doubt about it.
Oh, no, what, no question.
That was before the Thompson Bowling, though, right? Thompson Bowling.
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the. They threw oranges at us, literally through walking from the bus into the arena. Now, you know, all of the new arenas, they have places where the bus drives down under,
right,
and lets you off, and you know, the public never sees you till you come out and warm up. We got off the bus and had to walk. Oh, I don't know, 20 yards to into the arena, and they threw oranges at us. So,
were those Tennessee teams any good?
Yeah, no, they were real good. They okay. were real good. Ray, my sophomore year, they had Tom Boerwinkel at center, who played in the NBA with the Bulls forever. They had a backcourt of Justice and Hahn. And, you know, there was no shot clock, and Ray Mears was the coach. Mm-hmm. And Ray loved to say that he had the best defensive team in college basketball. Well, the reason the statistics bore that out was that they would just stall. You know, they might have possession 2-3 minutes at a time until they got. But my sophomore year, early in the season, we went to Knoxville, and we got beat by like 30.
Wow.
It was at that time, and I'm assuming it still is, that was the worst as far as the margin of defeat. It was the worst game Coach Rupp had at Kentucky in 42 years of coaching. But then the rest of that story is the very last game of the season, we beat them in Memorial Coliseum to win the SEC championship. But, yeah, no, Tennessee was really good back then.
Okay, so let's take this conversation full circle, because we talked about the crowds at the games getting smaller, and then you just mentioned Memorial Coliseum. Are we going to see a movement as these schools go to build new arenas of going smaller, more intimate, more centered around the experience? Like, Memorial Coliseum, when it's packed, rocks, right? I mean,
yeah,
it was the toughest
ticket ever. I mean, it held 12,500, and I mean, there was no way. I was envious. I had a roommate my freshman year by the name of Randy Poole, and Randy never got off the bench, and his folks worked, so Randy got to sell his tickets for every game. On the other hand, my parents never missed a game, so I was always in Coach Rupp's office asking for extra tickets. But no, it was quite an environment. It was a great place to play, and I think you're right. You know, these arenas, you're not going to see any new basketball arenas that hold. What did Rupp hold before they renovated?
24.
Yeah. You're never gonna see because as we've said, you know, it gets tough. Unless you're playing a rival or a really good team, it gets tough to sell those tickets up in the rafters when there's 24,000 people there. What you'll see is exactly what you just said, an experience. You'll see arenas that you know, have more suites, because they can generate a whole lot more revenue in a suite than they can, you know, with 24,000 people sitting a half a mile away from the game. I think the new, am I not right, the new football stadium that the 49ers play in.
I think
one side is completely suites.
Oh, wow.
There's some, you know, the lower level, there's some seats, but there is no upper deck on the one side. It's suites all the way to the top. And so you're absolutely right. Yeah, that's where people are gonna move to, not having, you know, places like the arena at Tennessee. They just built a huge one, you know, so they could say it was bigger than Rupp. You won't see those anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be interesting, like whatever Kentucky does next. I mean, I don't foresee them leaving Rupp anytime soon. But, you know, do they go to that suites and then maybe move the students where the students have a little bit better, they can, the students can kind of drive the atmosphere, you can get the money in the suites. I mean, it to me, it makes a lot of sense. You know, it does not look good on TV, though, when your team's good and they show the sideline and, you know, it's 30% full. You know, it's just not, it's not good.
Well, and that was the criticism of Kentucky. Was it 2 years ago when they had such a bad, or maybe it was last year, they had such a bad non-conference schedule. Somebody got the actual ticket count, and there weren't 10,000 people in Rupp for any of those games.
Yes, right. By the way, Lynn Bowden was the name of the player that I couldn't remember just a little bit ago. So
there you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
So anyway, big matchups again in college basketball yesterday. I mean, I do love how the college basketball season. Hopefully, we're going to see more of this in the college football now that there's 12 spots in the college football playoff. Which again, if there's two teams from the SEC that typically make the Final Four, and we're going to multiply it by three, I'm expecting six teams from the SEC when the college football playoff goes to 12. Just because I think Blankenbaker would really appreciate that. But last night we got Creighton in Texas. Creighton goes to Texas and loses by five. You know, again, that's a loss right there, Dan. You go to Texas and lose by five that you probably got way more out of than beating the Ospreys by 40, right?
No question. No question.
That prepares you for the tournament. Utah knocks off Arizona. Just doesn't knock them off. Beats them by 15 and really off a dominant first half. And that was the anniversary of Rick Majerus passing away.
Yes.
Did you ever get to meet Rick Majerus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was a man's man. I believe that he lived in a hotel. Hotel room. Yeah.
I know he did in St. Louis. I mean.
Yeah. I know he did in Utah. Utah was where I met him. We were over there for the play the Jazz for something. Maybe we practiced. Was he wasn't the coach when Andre Miller played.
Yeah, and because that was the 98 team that played. Did Andre Miller play in that 98 team, I think?
Yes. That would have been the time frame. That's where I met him. Because
at the Final Four?
I went to Utah. I was the general manager then for the Nuggets. And I went to Utah to watch we were playing. The Nuggets were playing the Jazz, and I went up and watched a Utah practice with Andre Miller, and that's where I met him.
But then you all drafted him, right?
Yeah.
There you go.
I've told this story before. We were in Maui. I was the first year. I was brand new general manager. And we're in Maui, and of course, you know, every general manager in the NBA goes to Maui, you know, to quote unquote scout the teams over there. It's really just a nice family vacation, but they have a row there in the end zone for the NBA scouts, and I was placed right next to the logo. Jerry West, who was the general manager for the Lakers at the time. And so we sit there for 3 days and really enjoyed all of the insight. So we're packing up, the tournament's over, we're packing up our briefcases, and Jerry looks at me and says, so who do you like? And, you know, I'm thinking, well, don't screw this up. And so I beat around the bush and give him a couple of guys' names. And he looks at me and he says, Dan, we only saw one guy who can play in the NBA, and that's Andre Miller. And so that was don't get too carried away. Just look at the players who can play and try to simulate them into the NBA. And that's I'll never forget that. He said, we just saw one guy that can play in the NBA.
And I think a lot of people don't realize, too, Dan, like, you know, when you're watching those kind of calls. And then the same thing with high school. I actually had this conversation the other day because, you know, I used to recruit a little bit on the college side. And you know, the kid who can score, you know, who can just shoot the crap out of the basketball and whatever else, those are a dime a dozen. Like, people don't really realize what you're really looking at to see if they can go play at that next level, whether it's college to pro or high school to college, right? I mean, number one, like, I always looked at, yeah, your kid can score, but can he defend his position? If he's not athletic enough to defend his position, what good is he, if, you know, whether or not he can score or not, right?
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, we were big on watching how he interacted with his teammates, what, you know, trying to watch what his parents were doing, what kind of, were we getting a good kid or were we getting a headache? And was the person, we talked about this yesterday with culture, is the kid worth the headache coming in? I mean, I was in one gym in Springfield, Massachusetts, and the kid just came off the floor and, like, slammed the chair and went straight to the locker room. I was like, well, all right.
Cross him off.
Yeah, don't think you're coming to the Derby Classic this year. So, you know, it was just interesting to just see that kind of stuff and just and watch what people – and, again, like – sometimes I would be at AAU events with my daughter, and a girl would have a bad shooting night, and there would be college coaches in the stands. And like, man, I really screwed up my my chances. I couldn't hit a shot. And I was like, the coaches don't even really look to see if it goes in. It's way more important to have the ball leaves your hand versus whether or not it went in or not.
Yeah. You know, when I was a general manager for the Nuggets and used to go to different schools and scout, I got some other really good advice from a guy who did it for a living. And he said, don't just show up at game time.
Yeah.
He said, you're doing yourself and your team a real disservice. He said, get there for pregame warmups. He said, and you can, by observing what these guys do, even in pregame warmups, you can discover a lot about their character, how their teammates feel about them. And I always thought that was good advice.
How they approach the whole thing, right? I mean, just how they approach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to be pro, like, you know, you don't want to have the Kyler Murray situation where you have to say you have to study so much and put that in the contract, right? So you're getting paid millions of dollars to play a game.
Yeah. At least do some film watching.
All right, so back to this Arizona team who just suffered the loss to Utah. It's going to be, again, we're going to see this Arizona team play IU next weekend. So IU goes out there. And then they got Tennessee coming to Arizona. But I don't know where the Arizona-IU game, that might be a neutral site. But then the Tennessee comes to Arizona the week after that. Like, you're going to know where that Arizona team stands.
For sure.
I think it's going to be – I just love these matchups, Dan. I don't know if we have, like, a team that you can just say, like, they're just freaking incredible. I think it's – I don't know if it's that we have a whole lot of really, really, really exceptional teams, or we just, like, the talent level or the teams are just a step down and we just got a big pool in the kind of the upper mediocre pool of things. What do you take on
that? You know, I think it's the former. I think it's there's a lot of talent.
Okay.
In college basketball today. I really do. I think the difference is if you are well coached, or if the coach just says, you know, we've got so much talent, we're just going to roll the ball out there and play. It doesn't matter how much Mike talent you have. You still have to – it's still a team sport. And if you play as five individuals – and look at Bellarmine. Bellarmine's a great example. Was the game tied at halftime with Kentucky?
Bellarmine took the lead in the second half one point.
Yeah. And you think there's one kid on that Bellarmine team that could make UK's roster?
Well, as a walk-on, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, they'd be sitting
there's
down
no
at the end
player.
Of the bench.
No.
I mean, the fact that Kentucky's Mr. Basketball last year is playing at Bellarmine kind of makes that point. But yet, you know, playing as a team versus in the first half playing against five individuals where Kentucky was not executing anything offensively, you know, it's still a team game. And so, to me, those are the teams that are going to ride because, again, there's so many teams out there that are good, so many teams out there that are talented. It's the teams that are going to play together and are well coached that will rise to the top come March.
And I also think it does matter in March, too. If you've got a bunch of young kids out there that are just thinking about, you know, what's going to happen when the draft day comes up, versus you got a junior or senior who knows that this might be their last NCAA tournament, that kid plays at a different level. Like when when they know like their basketball career might be over.
Yep.
If they lose this game, it's just a different level. I mean, and then you just there's a lot of maturity that happens between 18 and 22, right? I mean, you got going from a boy to being a man in that time too. I think a lot of that happens, and I think that's why it's so important to have a good mix of young talented people. I do think you can have too many kids on your team that are like one and done NBA type players. I think
it's
detrimental.
No,
I think you've got to have a balance.
You know, you look at and when Kentucky won the championship in 12, you know, I think a lot of people think, well, excuse me, that was a one and done team, but no, it wasn't. The two guys that were number one and number two in the draft, those were one and done guys. Everybody else on that team was a veteran, and Cal and a lot of other teams have had a whole bunch of one and done players that didn't get anything accomplished. I mean, look at was it Duke that had everybody drafted last year off of their starting five? A bunch of them. I know at least four of them.
Yeah,
I know at least four of them were drafted, and of course they had the number one pick in Banchero. But you know, did they get anything done in the tournament?
It's just because, I guess it matters what you're going for. But that I actually believe that 2012 team that you just referenced, Dan, it was so important. I went to the Final Four in 2011, and that might have been the worst Final Four ever because it was just awful basketball. UConn wins it. Kentucky looks terrible against UConn. But
where was that held?
Houston.
Okay. All right.
If Terrence Jones and Deron Lamb don't have that experience and know what it's like to just flop in the Final Four, I'm not so sure that this team wins the national title.
In 12.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was – did you not go in 12?
I did not go in 12. I've only been in 2011, and I said I would never go again. And again, it kind of goes back to our COVID conversation. Like, you get a seat, but you're a mile – you know, I wasn't paying for the court side. You know, if you're not on the sides in the lower level, you're so far away, you're just better off watching on TV. So.
Yeah. No, there's no question about that. I've been to a number of Final Fours. We were there in 12. Sherry and I and our daughter and our grandson. Our grandson was about 11 or 12 years old, and Ben has bright red hair. I mean bright red hair. It's so red it almost looks like it's dyed. And he had Sheridan get a black marker and put a unibrow on him for the final game. That's was hysterical. So and me and my son, I think, Mike, it was the last NCAA championship, last NCAA Final Four that was held in a basketball arena. And I can't remember the year. Might have been Kentucky was there. Might have been early 90s.
I thought Rupp was the last time it was in a basketball arena. Was it not in 85?
No,
okay.
it was in the Meadowlands.
Okay.
It was.
Oh, well, you know what? Kentucky won 96 in the Meadowlands. Didn't that when they beat Syracuse in the Meadowlands?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, Syracuse beat them, didn't they?
Kentucky beat Syracuse in 96.
Okay.
And Kentucky lost to Arizona in 97 and beat Utah in 98.
Yeah, well, it was that when they won. Yeah, it was. They did win that year, but that was in the Meadowlands, and that was the last year that it was in a basketball arena.
By the way, I can't just mention Jones and Lamb, but also Darius Miller, a huge part of that. I mean, you had a legit senior leader who actually was from the state of Kentucky, who I think, you know, that on that team, that 2012 team, that really made a difference. So
you know what's an amazing stat about that team is out of the starting five, the two players that took the least amount of shots out of the starting five were Davis and Kidd Gilchrist.
Right.
and they wind up being number one and number two in the NBA draft.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, much more good. Now, do you think they're making a mistake by going to play in London now?
No. I think it'll be. I mean, obviously they had because they flew all night. They had to take yesterday off to kind of But those young kids should, I mean, the jet lag shouldn't bother them much. Coming back will be more than going over, I think. But no, I think that's a great experience. I was reading Ben's article this morning, and obviously he didn't have much contact, if any, with the team yesterday.
Right.
So it was basically questions to the team that he had prior to departure. And Toppin was one of the kids he interviewed, and Toppin said, I've never been outside the United States. And he asked him, he said, well, what are you looking forward to seeing in England? And he said, I don't know. I think I'll ask my mom. And he also quoted C.J. Fredericks in there, and C.J. said that he had been on some teams. He'd been to Europe when he was like 14 or 15 years old. But no, that's going to be a great experience for the kids. Now, having said that, come Sunday afternoon, all of that sightseeing and all of that stuff has to be put behind them, and they have to win this game. They lose this game to Michigan, and they're out of the top 25, and then I think people really start questioning, is this team a legitimate NCAA championship contender?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think at the end of the day, though, too, like out of that 20,000 seats in that arena, what percentage of them, like, is it going to be 25% full?
I want to ask after the break. We have Picks Without Pat.
Yes.
But we'll have some time to talk. I haven't asked you if you're a big World Cup fan.
Oh.
If you're following the World Cup at all.
All right, we can talk about that.
No, you're absolutely right. Because they were supposed to play there 2 years ago, and now it gets pushed up to this Sunday. They tip off, Kentucky and Michigan tip off at 6, and England plays Senegal at 7. So, no, I think they're probably going to have a hard time drawing people because, the World Cup and soccer is so big in, almost every place in the world except here.
Right.
You're right, 25%. That might be a little low, but it certainly won't be full, that's for sure.
Well, Kentucky fans follow Chris Mack into Walmart, so I guess they'll follow Kentucky to London and do that too. So,
hey, a reminder that this hour of the show is brought to you by Kentucky Tourism. When you're ready to explore the outdoors, there's no better place than home. Hike, bike, paddle, fish, or even venture deep underground. This is Kentucky. Come see for yourself. Plan your getaway today at KentuckyTourism.com.
Tired of eating the same homemade meals over and over again? Want to switch it up? Locally owned delivery.com safely brings the restaurants to you. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner, they'll bring it to you. Delivery.com delivers some of the finest restaurants in Metro Louisville. Miss going out to eat but still want to support your favorite restaurants? Delivery.com has got you covered. Use promo code ORDERNOW for $10 off your next order. Sit back, relax. Your meal's on its way. Delivery.com. We bring the restaurants to you.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Injured in a car accident? Visit suedistracteddriver.com.